Mathura Dhamma Ki Jai, Navadvip Maya Pur Dhamma Ki Jai, Jagannath Puri Dhamma Ki Jai, Gangamaya Jamuna Devi Ki Jai, Bhakti Devi Ki Jai, Tulsi Maharani Ki Jai, Samaveta Bhaktivrinda Ki Jai, Gaur Premanande. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prastaya Bhutale Shri Mati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namane Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pacharane Nirvisesa Sunyavadi Paska Chate Sacharane Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Padakamalam Sri Guru Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Stam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamsha Vanchaka Pachubhishcha Pipa Sindhu Bhavacha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namam Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya August 29, 2023 at Bhaktivedanta Manor in the United Kingdom. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 1, Questions by Vidura, Text 16. Swayam Dhanurdhvari Nidhayamayam Pratur Puro Mama Shu Taditopi Saita Machulbana Karna Bandhair Gata Vyato Yaduru Manayana. Please check. Dhanurdhvari, bow on the door. Nidaya, keeping. Mayam, the external nature. Bhartahu, brothers. Puraha, from the palace. Marmasu, in the core of the heart. Taditaha, being afflicted. Api, in spite of. Saha, he, Vidura, itam, like this, ati ulbana, severely, karna, ear, banahai, by the arrows, gatavyataha, without being sorry, ayat, excited, uru, great, mana yanaha, so thinking. Srila Prabhupada's translation. And as we read this, I'd like you to think of what is apparently contradictory and mysterious about this verse. And what has happened right before this verse? Anybody? What's just happened? He wasn't sent away.
He was insulted.
And who insulted him? And what did he say?
Beat him so there's only his
life breath left. Throw him out, this son of a maidservant, and beat him so all he has left is his breath. Okay, so that's what's happened right before this. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. Thus being pierced by arrows through his ears. Were those physical arrows? And afflicted to the core of his heart. So the subtle arrow went from where? The ear to the? Vidura placed his bow on the door. How many of you thought of Vidura as walking around with a bow? Vidura placed his bow on the door and quit his brother's palace. He was not sorry, for he considered the acts of the external energy to be supreme. What's the apparent contradiction and mystery of this verse? He was not sorry, but
he was pierced.
Pierced. And he was feeling what?
Afflicted.
Afflicted. How afflicted? Really afflicted. He was feeling really afflicted, but he was not sorry. Is that strange? How can you be really afflicted, but not sorry? Let's read Srila Prabhupada's purport. A pure devotee of the Lord is never perturbed by an awkward position created by the external energy of the Lord. In Bhagavad Gita 3:27, it is stated, Prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvashah ahankaravi mudhadma kartaham iti manyate. A conditioned soul is absorbed in material existence under the influence of different modes of material nature. Absorbed in false ego, he thinks that he is doing everything by himself. The external energy of the Lord, the material nature, is fully under the control of the Supreme Lord, and the conditioned soul is fully under the grip of the external energy. Therefore, the conditioned soul is fully under the control of the law of the Lord. Did you get that? The Lord is controlling the external energy is controlling the jiva, so therefore, the Lord is controlling the jiva. That's mathematics. But due to illusion only, he thinks himself independent in his activities. Duryodhana was acting under such influence of the external nature by which he would be vanquished at the ultimate end. He could not accept the sound advice of Vidura. You ever have anyone who didn't accept your sound advice? Have you ever not accepted sound? I'm not asking for that one. But on the contrary, he insulted the great soul. Have you ever given someone sound advice and not only do they not take it, but they insult you? Have you ever been given sound advice and instead of taking it, you thought, why do I push everybody? On the contrary, he insulted that great soul who was the well-wisher of his whole family. Vidura could understand this because he was a pure devotee of the Lord. In spite of being very strongly insulted by Duryodhana's words, is that a strong insult? I'm going to beat you up until you have nothing left but your breath, throw you out of the family. Vidura could see that Duryodhana, under the influence of Maya, the external energy, was making progress on the path towards his own ruination. He therefore considered the acts of the external energy to be supreme, yet he also saw how the internal energy of the Lord helped him in that particular situation. So the devotee Gopal Hari, Radhikarman's younger brother, he's written a nice book called Maya in the Bhagavat Purana, and explains how the word Maya, which is in today's verse, that this can refer either to the external or the internal energy. So Prabhupada in the translation is talking about Maya for the external energy, and he starts talking about that in the purport, then he switches, and he talks about how Maya here can also refer to the internal energy. Yet he also saw how the internal energy of the Lord helped him in that particular situation. A devotee is always in a renounced temperament because the worldly attractions can never satisfy him. Vidura was never attracted by the royal palace of his brother. He was always ready to leave the place and devote himself completely to the transcendental loving service of the Lord. Now he got the opportunity by the grace of Duryodhana. And instead of being sorry at the strong words of insult, he thanked him from within because it gave him the chance to live alone in a holy place and fully engage in the devotional service of the Lord. The word gata vyataha, without being sorry, is significant here. The word gata vyataha, without being sorry, is significant here because Vidura was relieved from the tribulations which trouble every man engaged in material activities. He therefore thought that there was no need to defend his brother with his bow because his brother was meant for ruination. Who's the brother he's talking about? Dhritarashtra. Thus he left the palace before Duryodhana could act. Was that smart? He didn't wait to be beaten. Maya, the supreme energy of the Lord, acted here both internally and externally. Swayam Danur Dwari Nidhaya Mayam Bratru Parar Mam Shutadopi Saitam At Atyul Banakarna Banar Gata Vito Yad Uruman Yanaha. Thus being pierced by arrows through his ears and afflicted to the core of his heart, Vidur placed his bow by the door and quit his brother's palace. He was not sorry, for he considered the acts of the external energy to be supreme. I think that most people in the world would very much like to be unaffected by difficult circumstances such as this. I'm pretty sure that, you know, if you were to produce a book and a course on how to be severely insulted and threatened and keep your cool, that it would be extremely popular. And many times we think that what that means is that there's no feeling of affliction at all. You know, just like sometimes we're just walking and the sun's shining and the birds are singing and there's no disturbance in the mind and the heart. And we're imagining that if we were transcendental, then if someone threatened to beat us nearly to death and throw us out of our home, that we would have exactly the same internal experience. But is that what's going on here? Is Vidura having an internal experience like walking in the sunshine with the birds? No, he's not. There's a severe affliction, as if somebody did what? It's equivalent to what? Shooting an arrow in your ear that goes to your heart. Now, I don't know how much that would hurt, because in this life no one shot an arrow at me. But I would imagine that it would be extremely painful. So it's not that he didn't feel the affliction, but yet he was not sorry. Okay, so we're going to look at how we're affected and what the devotee does to be unaffected. So why are we affected? So on a material level, we're affected because we're social creatures. We're like herd animals. And if someone in our social group insults us or threatens us, the machinery of our body, the machinery of our brain, and the subtle machinery of our mind decides that we're under threat and therefore prepares us for fight, flight, or freeze, and floods our body with adrenaline and cortisone. This is a defense mechanism set up by the Lord, just like you have a smoke detector in your house. And if there's some fire or smoke, it goes off. And it may set off a sprinkler system even. So the machinery of our body and mind is designed that if there's some threat, not just from tigers and dogs, but if there's some threat by people in our environment, the brain says, maybe there's danger, maybe there's danger, maybe there's danger. We might have to run away, we might have to fight, we might have to hide. Prepare, prepare, prepare. And floods our body with these chemicals, which we then interpret as some sort of emotion. We may interpret it as anger, we may interpret it as fear, sometimes we may interpret it as shame or guilt. And we have these terms that we put on it. Now, if someone's identifying with this body and mind, when these biochemical reactions happen, then they will decide, should I accept these or not? Should I hold on to the fear and the anger or the shame? Or should I, are these bad? Are these good? Are these bad? And so the mind goes, well, was I actually insulted? Was I actually in danger? Okay, then I should be afraid and angry. Or was I actually not insulted? Okay, maybe I should repress the fear and the anger. That's how materially afflicted people respond to these. People who are identifying with the body and the mind. Huh? Now, we also become affected on a transcendental reason And that is that in our original spiritual position, we are also part of a spiritual society. In the spiritual world, there are families. Not families like in this world biologically, through biological processes, but there are families, there are friends, there are groups. There are groups of cows, there are groups of cowherd boys, there are groups of gopis. Srila Rupa Goswami defines in his Radha Krishna Ganadesh Deepika all these different families and their relationships. And there's something on the level of the soul is also saying, wait a minute, I'm supposed to be part of this family. I'm supposed to be part of this society. So this material attachment to, as Prabhupada would say, society, friendship, and love, is ultimately driven by something spiritual. But it comes out pervertedly that if my family members reject me, that I'm going to be in trouble. And we're especially afflicted when it's a family member, isn't it? I mean, if you're walking down the street and some random person threatens you, it's not as scary as if your family members threaten you, because we trust our family. Right? We live in the same house, we sleep in the same house, we trust they're not going to get up in the middle of the night and kill us and steal our money. And right? Maybe we share the key to the door, maybe we share the passwords for the bank account. So it's particularly frightening when a family member or close friend insults us. We feel particularly threatened. Now we were saying that, how are we going to deal with this? How are we going to remain? Or how are we going to find peace? Because Krishna says that without peace, there's no what? He says you can't have any what unless you're peaceful. Happiness. Happiness. You can't be happy unless you're peaceful. Can you be happy when you're angry? Can you be happy when you're in anxiety? Can you be happy when you're fearful? They're incompatible, right? So how are we going to find peace? Well, let's first start out with something really depressing. So Krishna is speaking to Uddhava in 11th canto, 23rd chapter. He reiterates what's happening to Vidura in text 3. He says, sharp arrows which pierce one's chest and reach the heart do not cause as much suffering as the arrows of harsh, insulting words that become lodged within the heart when spoken by uncivilized men. So Krishna is reiterating that what happened to Vidura is normal. That being insulted is more painful than a physical arrow. All right, in the verse before that, 11:23-2, he says something that I find very depressing. He says, O disciple of Brihaspati, there is virtually no saintly man, he's using the word sadhu, there's virtually no saintly man in this world capable of resettling his own mind after it has been disturbed by the insulting words of uncivilized men. Okay, I'm just finished. Krishna says if you're insulted, it's going to hurt worse than a physical arrow. And he's saying there's no sadhu that can resettle this. Have you tried the resettling of it? You know, someone insults us or threatens us or something and our whole body erupts in like... Because again, it's getting ready for us to run away from a pack of dogs. And you try to immediately resettle it and you can't. And Krishna says you can't. So I'm just going to believe him that my difficulty with resettling things is true. So what are we going to do? So we can look at the life of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who's exemplifying the behavior of a devotee. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, it said, had three states of consciousness. What were his three states of consciousness? Internal, external, and half-half. So in internal consciousness, what's an example of a lila when Mahaprabhu was in internal consciousness? There's a vibrate thing on your phone. Gambira. You can set it to vibrate. What?
When he was in the
Gambira, yeah. He was rubbing his face against the wall. He didn't even notice. What's another example? Yeah? Shiva Sangam. At Shiva Sangam in the Kirtan?
When he took different forms based on the relationship with the Vaishnavas.
Yes. What's another example? When he fell into the sea. Yes? So there are many examples of Mahaprabhu was in internal consciousness. When a person's in internal consciousness, is there going to be any reaction in the body when someone insults you? Why not? Because you don't even hear them. Think about Shamaka Rishi. When Shamaka Rishi was in Samadhi and Maharaj Parikshit put the snake on his neck, he didn't even know. He didn't even feel it. Because the preliminary thing is prachadara. You become unaware of any sensory input, almost like deep sleep, except that the intelligence and the soul is active. So in internal consciousness, you're not aware of anything. Generally, that is the state of samadhi. Of course, Prabhupada has an interesting statement in Bhagavad Gita 12.2 purport where he says you can go to the market in samadhi. I've often thought, would you really drive your car in samadhi, you know? Be a transcendental DUI. The police would pull you over and you'd say, I was in samadhi. Now, in external consciousness, so Mahaprabhu would be in external consciousness when? When he was teaching, usually, yeah? And every year, yeah?
He was teaching his students and they insulted him.
Oh, that's a good example. When he was teaching his students and they insulted him. And he was certainly aware of that. Whenever the Bengali devotees would come, Mahaprabhu would stay mostly in external consciousness. Now, of course, when a devotee is in external consciousness, they never lose that awareness that they're a devotee. I mean, Mahaprabhu is obviously God. But if a devotee is in external consciousness, they never lose that understanding that I'm a soul and I'm a servant of Krishna. It's never gone. It's never gone. And the devotee very quickly takes everything back to Krishna. This is Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur's explanation of a shakti, which is just still it's the top level of a sadhaka. That in a shakti, if anything happens in the world, or you're talking about, or someone else is talking about external things, your mind takes it to Krishna. There's actually types of ecstasy that Rupa Goswami describes. Burnt ecstasies, Prabhupada calls them. And Rupa Goswami gives examples of Mother Yasoda and Srimati Radharani, who had emotions related to something other than Krishna and quickly brought it to Krishna. Like Mother Yasoda had a bad dream that Putana was in the house, inside of her house, and she became afraid of Putana. And then very quickly she thought, oh, what about Krishna? So when the great devotees are in external consciousness, their emotions, their thoughts of the external world very quickly shift to Krishna because Krishna is always there. What about half internal, half external? So there the devotee is, they're somewhat aware of the external world, but they're more deeply engaged in the internal world. I mean, materially we all have examples of this. Some of you may be like this right now and not like only half hearing what I'm saying because you're thinking, oh my God, I have a car payment due and I don't have enough money in my bank. And so, you know, you may be in half external, half, you understand? You're sort of half listening and you're half thinking about something else. And when you're in half internal, half external, if someone says, hey, you fool, you may, what? Huh? And it may not immediately register. So, what do we do in external consciousness? Internal consciousness is no problem. But what do we do in external consciousness? Yeah. Well, what should we do? What could we do? What can we learn here from Vidura? Well, for one thing, we're supposed to be spending some of our day, every day, in internal consciousness. We're supposed to be spending some of our day, every day, in internal consciousness. That's the idea of 16 rounds, three Gayatris. During that time, as far as possible, we should be in internal, or at least half internal, half external. Then when we have to function in external, we can more easily access the internal because we've been cultivating that. Does this make sense to everybody? Okay, how are we going to access the internal? Now, this is important. We're not going to access the internal immediately philosophically. Have you ever tried to get someone out of an emotionally afflicted state with philosophy? Does that work? No. It may work later. But in the moment, it doesn't work. Have you ever tried to get yourself out of a heavily afflicted emotional state with philosophy? Does it work? Not immediately, after some time. But when you're in that state, philosophy is not very effective. By the way, one biological reason for that is that the stress response also cuts off higher order thinking skills. The ability of the mind to think about complex things is turned off when the flight-flight response is activated. You're not supposed to be doing calculus equations if a tiger's chasing you. Or, you know, your brother's son is threatening to beat you up. It's not the time for that. I mean, other things that are turned off is digestion, immune response. So philosophy, it just doesn't work. The person doesn't even hear it usually. Yeah? And in fact, if you try to speak philosophy to a very emotionally afflicted person, what will they usually get? Even more afflicted. So what are you going to do? Well, we're very fortunate in that although we have a very complex philosophy, we are not jnana yogis. We are not trying to become detached just philosophically. Our detachment comes about emotionally. Bhakti yoga is called devotional service. Devotion is an emotion. And what we want to do is we want to connect to the emotions of Krishna and his devotees. Because after all, if we could just be peaceful when someone insults us or something bad happens, ultimately that peace would not be satisfying, would it? We don't want to just be peaceful. I'm just peaceful. I mean, that's fine for a while. It's better than being heavily afflicted. But it's not satisfying, is it? I mean, you can come home after a long day and just go, oh, peace. But how long are you just going to peace out in your chair? You know, then we want to do something. And what's really interesting is that a lot of the way that people try to be unaffected by the heavy emotions of their life is to get involved in entertainment that's full of heavy emotions. Isn't that interesting? Because what we're looking for are the strong... Read about the Vyavicharibhava emotion of the great devotees. They're intense. So this is a little technique. Prabhupada says we should learn the techniques of spiritual life. Yes, purpose one. So here's a little technique. First of all, you have to know the Shastra. If you don't know the Shastra, this will not work. So we'll give you a second tier technique in a moment. But the top tier technique is you have to know the Shastra. It just doesn't work if you don't know the Shastra. So you've got to do things like actually study the Bhagavatam and the Chaitanya Charitamrita and Nectar Devotion, Bhagavad Gita. You have to get to know the personalities there. Which is a good idea anyway, since we're all planning to go there. We might as well get to know the people that we're going to hang out with. So, you know, get to know the people in the Shastra. And don't just get to know them to fill out a trivia exam. Because Leela is not about plot, it's about mood. So what we want to have some sense of is the emotions of the devotees. So let's say a family member insults you and threatens you. Then you can go to Vidura. Or a Babishan. How did he feel? How did Vidura feel? How did he feel? He was afflicted. He was churning. Everything was churning like an arrow had hit him, and he was at the same time so grateful. He was afflicted. He was churned. Everything was like there was arrow, but he was so grateful. And if we start to feel how Vidura felt, ultimately this is Krishna calling me. Ultimately this is Krishna's internal energy. He felt that way. And when we start feeling how Vidura felt, then our material emotions just go like a river into the ocean, which is always being filled, but is ever still. I was talking to one devotee that during the pandemic, her husband had gotten in a lockdown far away geographically. She was locked down in one part of the world and he was locked down in another part of the world. And she was greatly afflicted. And we said, who is there in the Shastra who was long separated from a husband geographically distant? Anybody? Sita and Ram. Oh, wow. How did Sita feel? How did she feel? Don't just think about it, you know, externally, philosophically. How did she feel? And as we started discussing this, we didn't go to Sita, we went to someone else. Draupadi.
With Arjuna.
When was Draupadi? Oh, when he went to heaven?
Yeah.
Oh, wow, I never even thought of that. Yes. How did Draupadi feel when Arjuna was in, or when he was going around, unbeknownst to her, collecting more wives? How did she feel in his separation? Lakshmi Priya, when Mahaprabhu was absent and he wasn't coming back either. Devahuti, when Kardama Muni was absent. That's a good one. We thought about Rohini. We meditated on Rohini, how she was raising Balaram alone as a single mother without Vasudev. We ended up writing a poem about Rohini. Anyway, as we went into these emotions and she became filled with these emotions, her affliction on the mundane level dissipated. Now, Rupa Goswami explains this process in depth in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. He says, just like in an ordinary drama, the viewers feel the emotions of the characters that are being portrayed in the drama. I think we have all experienced this. Even on a mundane level, you're watching a play or a TV show or a movie, and whatever characters are being portrayed, you feel those emotions as if they were your own. This principle operates because transcendentally it operates. So Rupa Goswami explains in depth that when we hear about or read or see a drama of the transcendental personalities, we can feel their emotions as our own. When we feel the transcendental emotions of which these material emotions are just simply a reflection, we are actually satisfied. It's like if you're drinking some chemical imitation of juice. Yeah? Water, sugar, color, flavor, 1% juice. And someone comes and gives you some freshly squeezed juice. We're satisfied. This is the only ultimate cure. Now, a level two is given throughout the Shastra that you just step back. And Vidura is also doing this. Oh, that's just the external energy. How interesting. And this technique has become very popular in the world today. There, yes, it's very popular. People are literally making millions of pounds teaching this technique. You just step back and you go, I am not this body. I am not this mind. Look at all these interesting chemical things happening in my body. That's interesting. I am the observer. I will allow this affliction to pass through my body and mind, and my body and mind will come resettled whenever it becomes resettled. And the medical research show that if you don't respond to this sort of affliction, it passes in 90 seconds. If you respond, it can last for about 20 minutes. And actually, the pure devotees do both. And Vidura here is doing both. Stepping back. It's the external energy. Wow, that's just... Look at Duryodhan. Wow, he's really in Maya. He doesn't know where he's going. Look at what's happening in my body. Wow, this arrow went into my ear and it went into my heart and my... Wow. Look at that. Just see how Maya's working. And he went to the internal energy. Krishna's calling me. I need to go right now. I need to go right now. I have no more business here. I'm leaving my boat. Krishna's calling me. He went to the emotions of the internal energy. And then we can go to philosophy. At that point, once everything is settled, then we can go to philosophy. Krishna's calling me to what? What does he want me to do? What am I supposed to learn? How am I supposed to go forward? Prabhupada's purport to Gita 14:22-25, he says, as long as we have a physical body, the modes of nature are going to affect our body and mind. Please don't think, well, I'm just going to be a nonsense, materially afflicted soul running around, being disturbed by everybody and yelling back at everybody and causing problems, and someday it'll just be gone, even while I'm in this body. That's not what happens. As our sadhana, we should have times when we're fully internal, and even when we're in external consciousness, we should keep the thread always of the internal. It should be like, there should be like at least background music. You follow? If there's background music, you're always hearing it a little bit, and whenever you want, you can turn your attention to it and away from what's going on. Does that make sense to everybody? And when there's heavy affliction, I like to think of it as a noisy vehicle passing on the road. When there's a noisy vehicle passing on the road, you have to stop your conversation. You cannot force conversation when there's a noisy vehicle. Stop, observer, and go to spiritual emotion. And if you say, I don't have any spiritual emotion yet, that's fine. Access the spiritual emotion of the great devotees. For that, again, one has to know something. One has to have a repository that one can... What great devotee has this emotion? And then work on feeling it. And as you work on feeling it, what are you doing? You're going more and more internal, aren't you? Yes? And as you're going more and more and more internal, the external seems like what it is, simply a dream. So thank you very much. I think because of Jhul Nyatra, we don't really have time for questions. Do we have time or no? One question, yes.
It's in chapter,
Bhagavad Gita 15, yes.
3 and 4.
Cut down the banyan tree with the weapon of knowledge and detachment.
And then it says in that powerful verse that not only do you do that, you seek help through the sadhus. It says perfectly what Vidura did. She just went to sadhus.
Yes. And, excellent. Thank you so much. Thank you very much. Anything good here is from Srila Prabhupada and our acharyas. Anything bad here is from me. There's actually a Sanskrit verse like that, but I haven't yet memorized it. So please take the good and please put aside the bad. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.